President Trump and former Vice President Joe Biden met on stage last night in Cleveland for the first of three debates. We have morning after analysis with your insights on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Ahead of the debate, the Biden campaign released the Democratic nominee's 2019 tax returns and his running mate's Kamala Harris's returns, keeping the focus on the New York Times' investigation published this week that found President Trump has paid little or no federal income tax for years. Did you watch last night's debate? Who do you think won? What statements or messages stood out to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Andra Gillespie is an associate professor of political science at Emory University in Atlanta and a political analyst. Andra, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Well, NPR's political editor wrote this morning, this was maybe the worst presidential debate in American history. What did you make of it?
I completely agree. You know, the display, just the contention between the candidates was actually really, really shameful. And in particular, you know, President Trump acted like an aggressor. And I know that some people, you know, like that, that they think that he's speaking truth to power, but he is the power. And so I think to a lot of people, he just looked like he was bullying Joe Biden.
And it was bitter and caustic from the get-go. At one point, Vice President Biden told former Vice President Biden told the president to shut up. Let's have a listen.
The radical question, left.
Will you shut up,
your,
man?
Listen, who is on your list, Joe?
This
who's
is
on your
so
list?
Gentlemen,
this is,
I think
this
we've
is
ended
so
this.
Unprecedented.
What do you make of the hostility on display between both candidates?
Well, one, I think to some level we expected that. If we go back to 2016 and think about how President Trump interacted with first the Republican field and then with Hillary Clinton, he's always the aggressor. And, you know, we know that sort of in his personal and business life, he likes to counterpunch in terms of an argument. And so we knew he wasn't going to back down from an argument in this particular time and that he was going to be particularly aggressive with Vice President Biden because the hope was to get him to make a misstep, to perhaps lose his train of thought so that he could confirm the things that he's been saying for the last couple of weeks about not just him being low energy, but perhaps him having dementia. And so Joe Biden succeeded in not necessarily sort of, you know, proving, you know, and proving that he can, you know, withstand a debate and that he held his own. But we didn't learn much from the debate because of all the shouting going back and forth.
Well, let's take a call now. Chris is joining us from Luck this morning. Hi, Chris.
Good morning.
Good morning. What did you think?
I think that the format was a disaster. In other words, I think that if we reflect back on debates decades ago, maybe in the 70s, the candidates sat separately in chairs and had to approach the microphone individually to answer questions. And that gave opportunities for them to answer questions about the banter and all the negativity.
Without being stepped on by their opponent. Andra, what did you make of the format?
I mean, this is a format that has been used before. You know, I agree with the caller that perhaps future debates may consider not necessarily having a debate back and forth between the two candidates, but direct questions towards the individual ones. But that was what Chris Wallace was trying to do. And so as long as long as you can't cut a mic off on somebody, I would expect that Donald Trump is going to try to talk over people because that's how he thinks he wins debates.
We're talking with Andra Gillespie, who is an associate professor of political science at Emory University, and she's unpacking last night's presidential debate, the first of three, with your insights at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Matt from Nisida. Hi, Matt. What did you think?
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. So I think the debate is telling of the state of discourse, political discourse in the United States right now. I personally blame, partially the two-party system for limiting us to two choices. I would have loved, for example, to see Jo Jorgensen debate. I think she would have had a lot of insight and probably would not have devolved to what it was last night, which really was shameful.
Matt, thank you for your comments there. And Andra, this is the state of discourse in our country, Matt's saying.
I agree that it's the state of discourse. I'm not sure that having third-party candidates on the stage would have changed anything. If you recall, Donald Trump's first debate was in the summer of 2015. He did the exact same thing. I think he has just gotten better at it and is used to having a platform as president to be able to say mean things to people. So I think that regardless of the number of candidates on the stage, it was likely to have devolved into chaos because Donald Trump doesn't follow rules and conventions, right? And so some people view that as refreshing, but it was also very chaotic and very mean last night.
I want to look specifically at how they approached conversation about the current pandemic. Biden was on the attack and said the president's handling of the pandemic has especially hurt African Americans.
One in 1,000 African Americans has been killed because of the coronavirus. And if he doesn't do something quickly, by the end of the year, one in 500 will have been killed. One in 500 African Americans. This man is the savior of African Americans. This man cares at all.
So the vice president, they're repeatedly criticizing the president's handling of the pandemic and specifically people of color. Did these attacks seem effective?
To the extent that he was allowed to make them without talking over, without getting talked over by Donald Trump, I would say that they were somewhat effective. I think the biggest tell on race last night wasn't sort of his framing the pandemic in terms of the disproportionate impact on people of color. You know, with respect to the pandemic, I think it was pointing out that 200,000 people have died. I think it was, President Trump contradicting his task force members, the epidemiologists who have, been working on the front lines of this. But getting back to the race question, I think probably the most important takeaway from yesterday evening was his refusal to, unequivocally denounce white supremacists and to basically tell them to stand by. Heard that, and they're making their judgments accordingly.
Let's take a listen to that moment.
I'm willing to do anything. I want to see peace.
Then do it, sir.
Say it. Do you want to call him? What do you want to call him? Give me a name.
White supremacists and white
supremacists.
Proud supremacists and right
proud boys. Stand back and stand by. But I'll tell you what. Somebody's got to do something about Antifa and the left, because this is not a right-wing problem. This is a
FBI director.
This is a left-wing problem.
So why do you think the president is reluctant to denounce white supremacy groups there?
Well, I mean, President Trump has appealed to the racial resentments of some white people in order to garner their support. So because he has not been willing to repudiate white supremacists in the past if they've endorsed him, I think is something that's really telling, right? And so these are groups who, have been public in their endorsements and their support for President Trump, and he views them as a vital base, especially for a president who has, never garnered the approval or acceptance of the majority of voters in the country. So he is, taking the calculated risk that if he can drive up turnout amongst this aggrieved class of voters, that given their dispersion in smaller states in the United States, he can win the Electoral College. So I don't, I'm not going to speculate here whether or not he actually personally holds these views or not, but he has certainly made consistent appeals to these groups, despite anything that you could say that he's done that's benefited African-American communities. And for those instances where he has instituted a policy that has helped African-American communities or not hurt them, we can cite many other sort of actions that he has taken that suggest that he also, either is indifferent or outright hostile to the interests of African-Americans.
Emory University political scientist Andra Gillespie is our guide to last night's presidential debate. Did you take it in? What did you think? Were there issues you wanted to address that the moderator, Fox News anchor Chris Wallace, didn't bring up? Do you think this debate will make a difference in the election? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment with Andra Gillespie here on the Ideas Network. We're getting morning after analysis on last night's presidential debate here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Fox News host Chris Wallace moderated, not an easy task, as we saw as the president refused to abide by the debate rules and repeatedly interrupted. Were you fact-checking? Where did you hear the candidates exploit the truth or be right on the money? Political analyst Andra Gillespie of Emory University is our guide, and we're fielding your insights as well, beginning with Mark here, who's joining us from Wisconsin Dells. Mark, what did you think?
What I think is that Chris Wallace needs to be fired, and we need to get a moderator that can maintain control. If a moderator cannot maintain control, he needs to shut down the debate immediately and send the children home. That's what I think. Bye.
Andra, what did you make of the work of the moderator and Chris Wallace?
I have to admit, I was somewhat surprised. Chris Wallace, of the four moderators selected, is the experienced moderator, particularly for the three presidential debate moderators. And so, you know, I would have expected that his would have been the debate moderation that would have been the most controlled.
And he said beforehand he wanted to be invisible.
Yes. I mean, you know, that was, you know, why we don't expect moderators to fact check and to do other things. I think that he had a very thankless task. And I have not had to moderate debates before, but I've certainly had to moderate more than my share of panels. When a panelist wants to do what they want to do, it's actually really hard to do that. And it seems easy to think that you could shut something down. It's actually a lot harder than it looks. So in some ways, I'm a little sympathetic to Chris Wallace. But I also think that that got out of control. And I think the thing that I worry about for future debates is whether or not those are going to get out of control in the hands of less experienced moderators.
Let's bring in John now in Madison. Hi, John. What are your thoughts?
I wanted to know if there was a way that moderators could turn off microphones when it's not the candidate's turn to speak. I grasp that it's the president of the United States and people, like, really want to hear him speak for some reason. But I really think that if you can't abide by the debate rules, it's impossible to have a reasonable debate. Also, how come moderators can't fact check?
John, thanks. Andra, can you tackle that first of off with can moderators turn off a mic?
You'd have to check with the presidential, with the Commission on Presidential Debates for that. I don't know if there's anything in the agreed upon rules that would prevent that from happening. I think probably there's going to be a revisiting of the standards, and you know, people were speculating last night on Twitter. I don't know sort of what this is worth about whether or not the other scheduled debates will go forward, given what happened last night. So I expect that they're going to try to do something to moderate what's going on. Both campaigns are going to have to agree to any changes, if there are to be any changes going forward. And I think that there's an open question about, even if they do agree, whether or not President Trump is actually going to abide by the rules when he gets into the room.
And that next debate is October 15th, set to be moderated by Steve Scully of C-SPAN.
Yeah, and I think to the other question about whether or not a moderator should fact check, it did happen a few years ago when Candy Crowley of CNN actually did fact check in real time, and she was highly criticized for it. It's, you know, most people think that this is supposed to be a format where the candidates are allowed to speak for themselves and to present their own vision, and for a moderator to intervene and especially to single one of the candidates out and call them a liar is something that might look like it is introducing a certain level of bias. I understand, you know, that President Trump, you know, it has been much more likely than other presidents to be caught in lies, but that's just what makes everything extraordinary. We have been used to following norms in terms of how campaigns run, our candidates run their campaigns, and then also how candidates behave and then what they do once they're elected president. And Donald Trump has completely thrown out the rule book. And so I think we're at a reckoning point where we ask ourselves whether or not that destruction, if we think about it, is actually helpful and constructive, or whether or not it's just chaotic.
I want to listen to one point here. Last night, Fox News' Chris Wallace, as we've been talking about, scolding the president for continually interrupting.
Mr. President, your campaign agreed to both sides would get 2-minute answers uninterrupted. Well, your side agreed to it, and why don't you observe what your campaign agreed to as a ground rule, okay, sir?
And so ground rules here thrown out the window, as we've been talking about. Andra, have ground rules been an important piece in the past in presidential debates?
I mean, you know, we have seen plenty of debates where we've watched, you know, candidates kind of flagrantly sort of not abide by the rules. But then there's not abiding by the rules, and then there is setting them on fire. And I think what we saw last night was completely setting them on fire. And that was a difference. And I think that that was part of the sort of frustration that got Chris Wallace to the point where he had to openly check them. And it's interesting that he appealed to the rules that you have previously agreed to try to sort of bring things back in line. I don't think it helped much, but I appreciated Chris Wallace's effort, and I think it shows how difficult that is. You know, it's one thing to consistently go over your time limit, which is what candidates do all the time, but it's another thing to just, you know, completely try to talk over people and not actually try to let your opponent get a word in edgewise and then continue to do it even when you get called on it.
We're talking with Andra Gillespie, who's an associate professor of political science at Emory University. She's our guide to last night's debate in Cleveland, with your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Daryl, who's joining us from Menominee Falls. Hi, Daryl.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I wanted to express my view about Donald Trump's behavior last night and during the debates, and it was just another fine example of the disrespect and lack of dignity that Donald Trump has and has always had since he entered office. He has no regard for rules, has no regard for anybody's right to speak. And it's really a shame that people have to make exceptions for a man that holds the office of the President of the United States, who acts like a five-year-old in front of the whole United States during a debate, because he's got to have.
Daryl, I want to ask you a quick question here. Would you watch future debates here? This is first of three. Would you watch the subsequent?
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Andra. Andra, do you think this particular debate will move the needle at all on polling or how Americans feel at the ballot box?
And a short answer, no. I think most people came into this debate knowing who they were going to vote for that small sliver of truly undecided voters. This could help them decide who they're going to vote for and if they're going to vote at all. But I think for the most part, most people kind of came in knowing who they supported, and I don't think they changed their minds based on what they saw. I want to go back. I find it interesting that the previous caller mentioned that President Trump behaved like a five-year-old. My seven-year-old niece apparently was watching, and I got a text from my brother, and she asked, do they know that children could be watching this? Mm. And I just, out of the mouths of babes, I couldn't have said it better.
President Trump attacked mail-in voting during the debate, falsely claiming that ballots are being thrown out en masse and tampered with.
They're being sold. They're being dumped in rivers. This is a horrible thing for our country.
There is no.
This is not.
There is no.
This is not going to end well.
There is
okay.
No.
This is not
that.
Going
Vice
to
President
end well.
Biden.
So, what effect do you think these attacks on the election process might have on the results, or whether people trust the results?
Well, I mean, I think that what he is saying is muddying the waters and could cause people to, you know, to cause people to delegitimize the election results when they happen. I think it is important to point out that he is hyperbolizing the problems with elections. Yes, somebody threw out 9 ballots last week. We, you know, hope this election isn't going to come down to a margin of 7 votes. And so while I would never, you know, sort of justify that type of behavior, which looks like it was more of a clerical mistake than any type of malicious attempt to try to sway the vote. And we have to be vigilant. And the fact that we know about that suggests that election officials are doing their job. You know, the idea of him suggesting that, you know, there's going to be massive voter fraud because of absentee ballots is something that's problematic. It could be shaping voter behavior. One, in terms of depressing voter turnout because it could demobilize people, but it's also changing voter behavior in terms of people who are listening to him, perhaps being more likely to go vote in person. So long as they do it safely, that's okay, but, like, the reason why everybody is voting by mail is because, given the pandemic, not everybody should be standing online. People have gotten sick, including in your own state, by standing in line to vote. So, it's really problematic. I think he's also doing this in part because of the projections that Democrats are going to be most likely to vote by mail. So he could win on the machine count on election night and then watch his lead go away as absentee ballot votes coming in. But the whole idea that it's going to take months to run the election, there is a point where the Electoral College has to meet and a vote would have to be certified. So, yeah, I mean, this, you know, it's probably going to take longer than election night. But that's because people are actually doing their level best to count things accurately, and they're trying to do so in a way that doesn't look like they're trying to influence election results, which is why we don't count absentee ballots as they come in, because you just can't trust somebody to start counting a couple of days or weeks before the election and not tell people so-and-so is ahead or so-and-so is behind, and behave accordingly. So this is being done out of a sense of fairness and out of a sense of trying to make sure that everything is done correctly.
Andra, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Andra Gillespie, Associate Professor of Political Science at Emory University in Atlanta. Coming up, we talk with a candidate who wasn't invited to last night's debate. We talk with Don Blankenship. That's after this news update on the Ideas Network.